So I'm going to ask the team to come forward to the front row or so. We're going to do kind of a tag team thing where we all have some different stories that we want to tell about the trip and the impact that we have down there. So you get to listen to all of those. This is the nine people that went on your trip. This is actually the only team picture that we took, and it happens to be in front of Spanx, yes? This is right across from the terminal where our connecting flight was in Atlanta. So the trip, this is what we do. We take two flights to get down to Honduras, and then it's about a four-hour van ride to get to the village that we actually stay at and work in. The picture in the top left is the Tunises. The Tunises and the Urbanix ferried us up to Midway and in the middle of the night so that we could catch our 6 a.m. flight without any of us having to drive. So that was absolutely fantastic. And then they came and picked us up and drove us home. It was really great. I don't actually think any of them are here, so. And then Ashby is always a huge help getting the trip organized. Steve's going to be next. He's going to tell us a little bit about the group that we partner with and some of the accommodations there and details of the trip.
I wrote mine down word for word because we have restricted time periods, and if I just talk, so it won't work. So we partner with Mercy International. Now, if you Google it, there's four or five Mercy Internationals, which isn't helpful. Look for Mercy International that's focused on Honduras, and that'll get you to their site. Henry Lohman's the director. My wife, Leslie, and I first met him in 1999 when Hurricane Mitch hit Honduras in the capital city way down south, Tegucigalpa. And so we went there in 2000 to do relief work and met him there as well and kind of partnered with him. And then he had been aware of this neglected people group up in south central Honduras called the Lenca Indians, a very marginalized people that the government and the church had ignored. And so he began relief work and construction in the Opa-locka Mountains. In 99, he purchased property where the mission base is located now, and was then made aware that within a 20-minute drive, there were a barrio consisting of people who had, one oral history is that they had encountered a hurricane, lost everything. They moved to this area. Each of them squatted on a little parcel of land and built initially survival shacks, but have been living in them for years. Terrible, terrible shacks. And so he began building houses then for these people. And he started recruiting teams from the United States to come down. And so in 2000 or so, we began leading teams from Imago, and we've been doing that ever since. To date, I think we've built about 12 houses. Imago has. Kudos, Imago, seriously. Our work involves much more than building houses, although it's a big piece of what we do. We really also focus on building relationships, and we'll talk about that in a bit. And we also focus on getting kids in school and keeping kids in school. And so we're part of a sponsorship program. And someone will also talk to you about that as well. So stay tuned.
Thanks, Steve. Just to seal the deal on this slide, one of the things about this is that this is an accessible trip. Like, you don't have to be terribly uncomfortable to be on this trip, even though it's a country with a lot of poverty. There's pretty decent accommodations, and they really take care of us with the food, and you've got a decent bed to sleep in and showers and stuff like that. And it's pretty. So as we go through this, we're going to tell you some stories about the people that live there that we consider our friends now, and we're probably going to challenge you to ask yourself, like, how should you be involved in this, which doesn't necessarily mean you need to go on the next trip, but we do like it when people go on the trips. But there are, we would like for you to consider how should you be involved in this. And I think Kyle will probably challenge you at the end with that, but maybe not. He's looking at me like I'm silly. So this is the family that we met this year. Maria is the grandmother. She lives with her son, Ray Dilio. I couldn't get a family picture with Ray Dilio in it because he was always working. So he's shown there leaning on a shovel. He took like a 20-second break once and somebody got a picture of it. His wife, Dominga, is in the picture, and then they have two kids, Angie and Ivan, and Maria's other, one of her other grandsons, Dulis, lives with them. So they've been in this house for about 5 years. Ray Dilio's a day laborer. He's the only one there that can get a job because none of the rest of them can be day laborers because they're women or children. And we tried to give a Bible verse to Dominga and Maria and found out that neither one of them can read because they didn't finish their education, which is fairly common in this area, which is one of the reasons why we're really passionate about the school sponsorships. And I guess we also learned that Maria does have a husband who spends most of his time somewhere else working to get a little bit of income, and every 2 or 3 weeks he comes home for a couple days. So this is the family. They were really I don't know, they seemed like really grateful for what they had and what was going on, and it was just a pleasure to meet them and help them out. Let's see. So Brad is going to come up now and tell you guys about what we actually do in terms of the physical parts of the trip.
Thanks, Corey. So those of you who don't know me, my name's Brad. This is my sixth trip down to Honduras. So generally when I tell people I'm going down to build houses in a poor area in Honduras, I usually have to explain what that means. So it's not a house like you would think of it. It's a concrete floor, cinder block walls, a metal roof. You know, we're not putting in plumbing or wiring or insulation and that sort of thing. Sometimes the families will add those extra things later. But it's basically taking them out of that shack that they're living in and putting them in a more permanent dwelling. So that was really came home to me, that the top left picture there, we had to partially tear down their shack that they were living in to build the new house. And just getting in there and, you know, it's things that they're building themselves, you know, branches from trees stuck in the ground, kind of haphazardly nailed together just to have some form of shelter. So the basic house is about 20 by 24 feet. So it just fits on the parcel of land they have with some extra room, usually in the front and the back for gardens and that sort of thing. So like any house, start with the foundation. So we'll get in there. After we mark it out, we'll start digging. So this is all manual labor, picks and shovels. And I don't know if it's just from all the rain they get or the high water table, but you're pretty much in mud a couple inches down. So you get dirty really fast. Once we get the trench dug, you see the rocks there. We'll fill the trench with the rock. Sometimes you have to break it up with sledgehammers to pack it all in. And then the concrete mixing commences. I don't want to give you the impression that all of Honduras builds things this way, but because I definitely saw some cement trucks. But for us, we're doing it by hand with shovels. So we'll have about 4 or 5 wheelbarrows of sand, 3 bags of cement mix. You get 4 or 5 people there with shovels just mixing it all together, form it into a volcano shape, put the water in, go around, mix all the dry material with the wet, and you'll just, like the upper right picture there, end up with a big pile of concrete in the middle of the street. Then you're carrying it by hand, usually in buckets, to fill in, making the foundation. So that's day one. Day two is all about the floor, so leveling off the inner part, tamping it down, and then more mixing of concrete and filling in the floor. So that's probably the 2 days that are the most physical. Day three, they have masons to put up the walls, so we don't pretend like we know what we're doing there. But in the meantime, we'll build the trusses that the roof will attach to. Generally, we'll start having more downtime at that point. We can go visit with the families that we've met in the past. There's always a big bunch of kids running around wanting to play. So as we take breaks, you know, interacting with them, the Gringos managed to beat the kids in a soccer game. I still don't know how that happened, but it did. The fourth day is all about getting the roof on, so you can see some of the pictures there, setting the trusses in place, and then it's a metal roof that gets screwed down, some rubber grommets just to help keep the water out, because that's, you know, they get these huge rainstorms down there, and just I'm assuming other things get wet, so they did mention that the next day after a big rainstorm, they didn't see any leaks in the roof, so I think we're okay there. So this is approximately the finished house. That's the family out front. You saw the picture of their former house. This is their new house. Leslie and Jamie stayed behind one day actually to finish staining and sealing the doors. So I think at this point they should have those installed. So at that point the family can move in. So again, we're going down there to build houses, but we get to know these people and through the years develop those relationships. So I'll turn it back over to Corey to kind of go through that in a little more detail.
Thanks. So on Sunday, I think Steve and Leslie were talking to Maria, the grandmother here, and it was one of the more poignant points in the trip for me. She just kind of starts crying to herself and says, I never dreamed that I would have a place like this. And I mean, it's such a privilege for us to be involved in that, because this is not like, it's obviously not that great of a house, but it is more than she ever dreamed of. And we, as a church, we got to be part of God providing that for her. So the next section here, we're going to talk about some of the longer term relationships that we've had down there and the impact of this. Several years ago, we asked Henry, the director of Mercy International, you know, it's really expensive for us to send trips down. Short-term missions is maybe not the best utilization of the kingdom's resources. Would you rather us just send you a big pile of money and then you can hire these local guys and they'll bust out like 20 houses in a year? And he said, no, absolutely, you have to keep coming down, keep bringing your teams down, because the relationships are more important than the house, which is absurd to me, but that's what the local guy in the midst of the work told us. So, I mean, this is just an example real quick. This is a girl that I met when she was 9, the first time I went down, and then the other picture is last year. They were super excited. It worked out that we were there. When on her birthday, we got to go to her 15th quinceañera party. This year, we got to reconnect with them again and found out that she'd been out of school for a week and, you know, use American influence, and she's back in school with just a little help from us. So that it's really exciting what that relationship has done over the years. So I asked Vicky to come up and talk about a concept she introduced us to called story holding, which will sort of explain why, maybe a piece of why these relationships are so important.
Okay, so I just got introduced to the concept of story holding several weeks ago by Lindsay Mooberry, actually. She read a blog where somebody was talking about this concept. And so what Corey said, the idea that Henry, the director of Mercy International, is telling us that relationships are so important, I think has to do with the idea of story holding. So I'm just going to read you a quote about that. This is from a woman named Megan Gahan, and it's from her blog. And it says, being a story holder is hard, quiet work. It often goes completely unnoticed. But without the steadiness and encouragement of story holders, there would be no storytellers. And I will say that most of the people we interact with in Honduras have no one to tell their story to. They need other people to know that they're not forgotten. And that's one of the things that we get to do when we go down there, is remind them that their story matters and that there are people that care. Dominga had mentioned that it's really hard to make friends in the community there. And some of it is just because you're busy all the time doing the tasks of everyday work that, you know, we have washing machines and dishwashers to do and they don't. So some of it is just reminding people that we care about them by returning every year. And so one of the things that we need to remember when we're being story holders is to have compassion and to stay present. And so when we remember that we're story holding, we remind others that they have stories to tell and that their stories matter. And we hold space for the other, and it gives us the opportunity to dive deeply into relationships, even for a short time. We're only there for a week. But we bear witness to each other's stories in these precious few days. And it can get frustrating because sometimes it feels like nothing is changing. But even if nothing is changing, they still have a story to say. They can tell us why it's not changing. They can give us the opportunity to listen to them. And that's one of the most important things that we do down there, is just reminding people that we care about them and that their stories matter. And so one of the things that that was in the devotional this year was just a lot about how can you be present? How can you be compassionate by being willing to listen to other people? And I think that for me, it was helpful to just remember that even if it feels like nothing is changing, the fact that I'm just listening is a huge deal.
Thanks. One of the songs we sung today, the line stuck out for me, "Hope for the Hopeless," that like I feel like that's one of the things that God uses us to do, is these people feel hopeless, and we get to remind them that God is redeeming their situation. So, Leslie, come on up. We tricked Leslie into public speaking, and she's going to tell you about the family that we met the family that we met last year.
This is a family we met last year. The upper right picture is their old house. The left side picture is a wall you face as soon as you enter their home in the new house. This is Hector Manguel and Orbelina's house, and their three young daughters. Last year, the Imago team arrived in the invasion, which is what they, at that time, still called that community. We were ready to meet another new family and work on building them a home of a block house. We found this family just as eager as we were, not only to work together on their house, but also to begin new relationships. During that time period, while the discussion of groundbreaking details and the measurements got underway, Orbelina drew some of us into the backyard and, with the help of the interpreter, asked if we'd help color her long, beautiful hair. Vicky, at that point, graciously agreed, and I became her gopher. Now, keep in mind that we had just met, and everything is very time-consuming, and this was truly a labor of love. And yet, for us, it was one of those aha moments. It was an honor to get to start a friendship in such a personal way right off the bat. This friendship continues to grow in spite of just a yearly visit. As we sat and visited, and this year we were able to ask all kinds of questions between us women, as friends eager to understand and know each other better. Before we'd left in 2017, Orbelina and their three beautiful daughters invited us back in to see their new home after they had moved in. Upon our entering, we saw all kinds of personal pictures, artwork, diplomas, and scriptures on their main wall, so proudly displayed. They had turned this block structure into their home. This young family is diligent in how they meaningfully capture their hopes and accomplishments. They are not merely surviving, but are thriving in the midst of their hardships. They're a family that is faithful in their commitments to church, friends, and in giving God praise for everything.
Thanks, Leslie. All right, Steve's going to come up now and quickly share some stories of some of the other people that we've met over the years.
So Denitsa is one friend. Les and I met her 9 or 10 years ago, a resident of the invasion. Our Imago team built a house for her at that time, and we We knew she was a wife, a mother of three boys. The youngest boy was Victor, who then was 4 or 5 years old. And Les and I somehow felt just an immediate connection with Denitsa. She's just very welcoming and gracious and ushering us into her place. And we didn't know it then, but she was carrying what to her were some very shameful secrets that were a terrible burden. And I think that initially, our team building a house for her simply because she needed a house, and knowing that we expected nor wanted anything in return from her, I think that was the initial launching of her trust of Imago Teams. The next trip or two, we would reunite, we'd catch up on things, and she began opening up more. And Les and I would ask caring and sometimes deep questions. And like Vicki said, I don't think anyone else is asking them anything because they don't give a rip. And sometimes these questions were uncomfortable, deep questions. But deep secrets require deep questions if they're going to be revealed. And she confided in us. And this led to her telling us that her husband is an alcoholic, terribly abusive of her, terribly. And but she couldn't leave then. She can't leave now. He's the breadwinner. He has the control, all the influence. And so for the time being, well, it's been years, she's locked in it, but nonetheless very hopeful and very strong, strong spirit and devoted to her family. Last week, she disclosed that Victor, who's now 14, quit school in January because they don't have money. Just the same story over and over. But he wants to be in school. He's a really motivated kid. And so we did some legwork, and I talked with Henry, the director, and I just got a text this week, a couple days ago, that they will let Victor resume in January, and he wants to pursue a nursing track. And so he can re-enter the program in January if he has the money. Les and I assured him, we didn't promise him that the money would show, but we assured him we'd do whatever we can do to make it happen. So anyone wants to help? Here's the beauty of Imago Teams going year after year to the same... I can never do this. And I get pretty... dang frustrated. This is shut up, Corey. This is the beauty of Imago Teams going year after year to the same people into the same place. This is that Leslie and I and Brian Carnabo were talking with Denitsa, and she doesn't know Brian. She met him once last year. I doubt she even knows his name. But she began disclosing some deeply personal matters. And afterward, Brian was shocked and expressed surprise that, why is she opening up like that? And I hardly know her. And I think this is why. Not because she has poor boundaries, but because we've been doing this long enough and we just keep showing up to where Imago has such a trust on her part that anybody new that joins the team, they automatically are trusted too. It's a beautiful thing. Wow. Nelsie. Nelsie. Next year, remind me not to do the relationship part. I'll talk construction. I met Nelsie about 10 years ago. 12-year-old little girl. Just... and it was something about her that drew me to her. I still don't know what or why, but typically most of the kids are clamoring for attention, in your face and irritating. She, on the other hand, was one of those quiet, reserved, invisible, really, invisible kids that were just off in the distance, watching. So I made a point to approach her. And she talked a little. She still doesn't talk much. But I befriended her. And then through the years, I'd always look her up. And we built a house for her and her significant other. She became pregnant at 16, had a little boy. The relationship didn't last with her and him, the significant other. And so she lost that house. And didn't we build a second one? My memory's shot. You're looking at me very confused, so ignore that. Anyway, we built a house for her. She quit school, obviously, because she's pregnant, had the baby, Franklin. So all these years, I keep looking her up, and she's still so reserved, but she lets me give her a hug and talk with her. And I often wondered, are we making any difference? I mean, does this mean anything to her? I got my answer a few years ago when she told me that she named her boy Franklin Stephen. Well, apparently we make a difference. We just keep showing up. And I invite any of you, join us in showing up. Last. All right, Byron, my buddy Byron. He's 24. He told me he was 12 when we first met. It's just ridiculous. He's a good kid. Well, kid. He quit school as well. I don't think he ever finished. He's a great laborer, hard worker. He helps us a lot on the construction. And this week, we were up on the roof, installing the roof. And at one point, he looked at me and he busts out laughing. And I said, I got defensive. I said, what are you laughing at? Because normally, all the Honduran laborers laugh at us because we're so inept at physical labor. And so I just attributed to that, and he didn't answer. He just shook his head, kept working. So then a day or so later, he and I were talking, and I was just telling him how much I appreciated our friendship, and he said to me that, he says, when you come down here, you make me happy. And then he said, remember up on the roof? I was laughing. That's why I was laughing. I was happy. That and 1,000 other reasons are why we go to Honduras as teams from Imago.
Steve says he doesn't want to cry in front of all of you, but I only asked him to share one of those stories. He's like, no, I got to tell all three. So Katie's going to come up next. We're going to talk about the hope and the future. This is, to me, one of the most, we talk a lot about the houses and the families and the relationships, which is, I love all that stuff. The impact this program has on the kids in that neighborhood and in the town of Yamarguila, this is what it's all about for me. So, Katie?
Hi, everyone. So, Hope in a Future is a sponsorship program through which local Honduran children that would otherwise be unable to afford the cost of school are able to obtain an education. The program was founded by Cindy Lohman, who's Henry, the director's wife, after she asked a little boy that she saw picking coffee one day if he was excited about the upcoming school year. And when he replied that he didn't go to school because his parents couldn't afford to send him, Cindy was moved to action. So since then, this program has enabled countless children to pursue a higher level of education, giving them hope for a better future. Henry and Cindy cannot do this on their own, however. It's through individuals that come to Honduras and meet the kids or hear their stories back home that are providing the necessary funds for these children to go to school. since 2015, people here at our church have enabled 14 Honduran students to graduate from high school, which is really phenomenal considering the stories that you heard Steve tell of two kids, several kids that have dropped out of school because they couldn't afford to go and needed to help support their families. So to hear that just in the past 3 years that 14 students have graduated from high school as a result of our church being able to send them is pretty amazing. And seven of those just graduated this past year in 2017. We currently have 8 students that are being sponsored through individuals here at Imago, and we added 5 more from the Invasion community that were missing school due to a lack of funds this year. So I'm going to have Kyle tell a little bit about our student that we met on our first trip to Honduras, Christopher.
Okay, so that young man is named Christopher. We met him 3 years ago or so, and he was just randomly assigned to us. So every year when we go and do this, the Hope in a Future kids that are sponsored by Imago come and have dinner with us. And I don't think anyone is more angry about that than Christopher. He is a man of few words, and I'm a man of way too many. So I'm amazed that we got him to smile, sort of, for this picture, because he just endured an hour of my, like, nagging, consistent questions. Oh, she tickled him. Okay. So at any rate, Christopher had older siblings, and at some point his mother took those older siblings, all girls, and moved to the States and left him behind. More than likely, it's because she thought that he would turn out like his dad. His dad has problems with alcohol. He would abuse Christopher, tell him he's not worth anything, and make him sleep with the hogs in the back of their house. So the fact that Christopher wants to continue his education or do anything with his life is amazing to us. He now lives with his aunt, who has 5 kids of her own, so she's not able to afford school for him on her own, and without somebody from this church supporting Christopher, he wouldn't get to go to school. I'm going to go cry over here now.
And then, so that's Christopher on the right with us this year. And then that's Jacqueline on the left. She's a girl that Kyle and I met last year on our trip to Honduras. She would come and visit us at the job site every day. And one day I thought to ask her, hey, you know, all these other kids have been going to school every day. Why aren't you going to school? And she said it was because she didn't have a PE uniform, which is required on the days that they do have physical education. If you don't have the uniform, you don't go to school. And so we asked her, well, if we're able to get you this uniform, can you go to school? And she said, yeah. So we talked to her grandma and asked if that would be okay. And so by the end of that week, she had a uniform and she was able to get back in school. And then so we checked in on her this year. And the first day we were there, we saw her walking back from school that day wearing her PE uniform that we were able to provide for her last year. And she immediately recognized us, came up to us, and showed us that she had been at school because she had that uniform. And so this year we checked in with her and we visit her grandma, who she lives with. And so a couple days later, Jacqueline wasn't at school. And I said, well, why aren't you at school today? And she said, well, we ran out of money and I have to pay for the next 2 months, so I can't go back until I have that money. So we talked to her grandma and wondered, you know, why is this a recurring problem? And Jacqueline had told us that she lived with her grandma, she didn't know her dad, and she didn't know where her mom was, and her grandma couldn't work. So they oftentimes wouldn't have money, enough money for her to continue her education. So we talked with Henry, and we were able to get her into the Hope in a Future program so that she'll be able to continue her education in the coming years. So those are just 2 stories of children in Honduras, but they're not rare. A lot of children have similar stories where they're unable to afford either the tuition or the necessary supplies to go to school, and if you can't purchase the supplies, you don't get to go to school. So there are currently 10 students that are in the Hope in a Future program that don't have sponsors currently, and then several other individuals in Honduras that could benefit from sponsorship. So if you are interested in sponsoring a student, you can reach out to Corey or myself or Laurel Householter for more information.
So we do want to thank everyone who provided financial support for this year's trip and all the trips before it, donated items from the wish list, prayed and continue to pray for our friends down in La Esperanza, encouraged us, provided us with fake internet points on Facebook, watched our dogs and or kids while we were gone, or drove us to and from the airport in the middle of the night. You people are amazing. I don't know if this happens every time. Sorry. We want you to know that it does mean the world to us that you guys come out and support this so hard every year. So the plan is to go back next year. We love when new people join us. So I've talked before about how this trip impacts my life, and I never get it out right. So since I can't effectively put words to it, I've decided that everybody just needs to come and do this once, experience it for yourself, and then you'll know. So I want you to know that I have no construction experience. I'm terribly out of shape. I've never had a normal social interaction in my life. But every year, I get put to use on this trip. So whatever your reservations, at least come. If you've flirted with the idea of going, come and talk to Steve or Corey or anyone who's been on this trip. Get a feel for it. And over the next 9 months, come talk to us. I think that's it. Oh, sorry, it's not. If you're interested in Hope in a Future, like Katie said, come and talk to us. If you don't feel like you can go, there are so many ways to support this trip. I can't think of a better way to use resources than to make this happen. That's it. I don't have a great closing comment, so I'm just going to awkwardly hand this to an adult.
Is that me?
That's you.
Thank you, Kyle. So I think the missionaries have talked in the past about go, send, or tell, I think is the phrase. Some of us were able to go this year. All of you were able to send us, and all of us are capable of telling these stories and getting other people to know about what's going on there. So I like Kyle said, I really appreciate the heart of this church and the focus on serving the marginalized who can't advocate for themselves, and we're able to help them out and be in a very tangible way the hope of God in their life. So thank you very much.